Started. Welcome. This is the NACER 2019-2020 webinar series. My name is Jim Hofferkamp. I'm here today with Angela Martin and Marla Cole, and this is boot camp. This is the week where we go over some of the fundamentals of cancer registry. This is not a basic training workshop, but rather we're just kind of flexing, kind of working out some of those registry muscles that we just maybe don't get to all the time. All right. Well, as usual, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, please send those in through the Q&A panel. To do that, just hover over the tab at the top. You should see a big queue, a folder with a queue. It says Q&A underneath. Click on that and send your questions in through there. Okay. If you have participants watching this webinar at your site, we do ask that you take down their names and emails. And about a week from now, when we put the final Q&A together, we will ask that you redistribute that to anybody that's watching the presentation at your facility. We do offer fabulous prizes, not just for questions, good questions, but if you have any suggestions, comments, just correct something, or if there is a question out there that I can't answer, if you can answer it for us, that is greatly appreciated. We know there's a wealth of experience out there in the audience today. All right, and we'll pick a couple people at the end and send them a fabulous prize. All right, the agenda for today, we're going to start off with quiz number one. We'll give you about 10 minutes to do that. We'll go over the answers, take questions, come back, do quiz number two. Then Marla's going to give us a big picture perspective on abstracting. We'll come back, we'll do quiz number three, quiz number four, and then we'll wrap up with a review of how to do searches using Cancer Forum and the SEER Sync, SEER Inquiry System, as well as how some tips on how to submit questions. Okay, and we'll also do a review of the take-home quiz. All right, Angela, I almost forgot to introduce Marla, our co-host today. Marla is a Registry Education Supervisor of Cancer and Clinical Registry Services at NThrive. She has oversight of the development and delivery of registry training and education. Marla's got a bachelor's degree from Indiana University, South Bend, and worked in the field of marketing communications prior to discovering her aptitude and passion for cancer registry. So Marla, welcome. All right. Well, I think that's enough of me. It's time to get started. Go ahead and pull quiz number one out. All right, quiz number one. Grab your pencil and let's see. I've got 3 minutes after the hour. I'm going to give you till 13 minutes after to complete quiz number one. Please begin. I'm going to interrupt you just for a minute. On question number four, E should be viewing of normally with a scope, hint, hint. So the definition of E should be viewing of normally with a scope. All right, pencils down. Let's go ahead and go over. Come on. Quiz number one. Where are we at? There we go. Okay, that's not working right. Here we go. Quiz number one. Match the prefix suffix with the best definition. So peri is D as in delta. Para is E as in echo. Oma is C as in Charlie. Sub is H as in Harry. Hyper is A as in alpha. Dis is G as in goat. Dinia is B as in bravo. And carp or carpo is F as in Frank. Number two, synthesis is G as in goat. Extra is D as in delta. Fibro is F as in Frank. Angio is A as in alpha. Dorso is B as in bravo. Hepatic is E as in echo. Intra is C as in Charlie. Number three, angina is C as in Charlie. Fatigue, E as in echo. Bradycardia is F as in Frank. Malaise is B as in bravo. Necrosis is G as in goat. Dysphagia is A as in alpha. And cachexia is D as in delta. Number four, ectomy is C as in Charlie. Oscopy, remember this is the one we changed, is E. E as in echo. Ostomy, F as in Frank. Hyster, B as in bravo. Oofer or oofer or oofor. G as in goat. Cysto, A as in alpha. Salpingo is D as in delta. All right. Check to see if there's any questions, comments, concerns. Everybody got 100% on that. Outstanding. That's what we want to hear. All right. This is boot camp. Just take a deep breath and get ready to start quiz number two. Quiz number two. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't go over the lymph nodes. We've got axillary, right here, kind of in the armpit. That's A. E, epitrochlear, kind of right at your inside forearm, upper forearm, I guess. Epitrochlear. F is preauricular, right behind your ear. Infraclavicular, right? So right around your clavicle. Infraclavicular. D, those are your subcarinal. Remember the trachea comes down, it bifurcates, left, right, mainstem bronchus. You got the carinas right where that splits. Subcarina is just below the carina, so that's D. And C, those are mesentery, right? Inferior mesentery. That's kind of covers your small intestine, that area. And we got the iliac nodes, G. All right, so we'll go over that one more time. A, E, G, B, D, C. All right. Now we're ready to go through quiz number two. I've got 17 minutes after the hour. Let's go ahead. We'll take 10 minutes again. Go ahead and begin taking quiz number two. We'll go over the answers at 27 minutes after the hour. All right, time's up, pencils down. Let's go ahead and take a look at, get it up here. Quiz number two. All right, quiz number two, starting off with some address stuff. Got a patient here. Well, you're a registrar in Florida. You got a patient that has a Florida address on the face sheet. But you find out that they're a snowbird. So they live part-time in Florida, part-time in Illinois. What you're looking for is where they spend most of their time. So it looks like they only are in Florida for a few months. So what you want is the Illinois address. So that's the answer. Answer number one is A. What address would you enter for the address of diagnosis? It's their Illinois address, right? Because they only spend a few months in Florida every year. Number two, you're a registrar in Florida. You're abstracting cases for a patient, or you're abstracting a case for a patient that was diagnosed at your facility. The patient's incarcerated at a nearby federal prison. Prior to incarceration, the patient was a resident of Illinois, probably a governor. What address would you enter for the address of diagnosis? And for this one, it would be the address of the federal prison. That person is, at least for the time being, permanently housed at that federal facility. So their address, their mailing address, is the federal prison. Number three, patient's street address is P.O. Box 116, 409 West Jones Street, Williamsville, New York. What should be in the data item? Patient address, number and street of diagnosis. And for this one, we did have some questions about it earlier, but it looks like it should be 409 West Jones Street. That's the street address. What we don't want is the P.O. Box. Now, somebody asked earlier, how do we know that this is not the post office, the address of the post office box? Well, it does say it's the patient's street address, P.O. Box 116, so we can assume that. Somebody else brought up a tip, said that if the P.O. box matches, or the, what was it, if something matched the zip code, you could kind of identify that.
Right, the zip code match. The plus four on your zip code, if you have a plus four,
yeah,
it should match the P.O. box number.
Okay. And that would tell you that the address that you're looking at is actually the post office, not the home address, right?
Yes, that's right.
I think that's right. We had one of our callers this morning. That'll be in the Q&A. We'll get a clarification on that. All right, number four, a patient was diagnosed, treated at your facility 3 years ago with carcinoma in situ of the cervix. You do collect these cases, just reportable by agreement. Patient now presents with a new diagnosis of lung cancer and a benign brain tumor. Assuming the patient had no additional reportable malignancies, what are sequence numbers for these cases? So for sequence hospital, and this is according to the store rules, we would assign carcinoma in situ of the cervix a 0-1. That's the first malignancy that you have abstracted in your registry. The lung would be 0-2. That's the second. And then the benign brain tumor would be 60, because we count the benign brain tumor separate. Okay, so I think there's some different rules for sequence central for SEER registries, but for hospital registries, this is what I understand the rule to be. If anybody has any comments or suggestions on this one, please go ahead and send those in. All right, number five, a 79-year-old Brazilian male is diagnosed and treated for cancer at your facility. You would code Hispanic origin as, and this would be non-Hispanic. Brazil is Portuguese, it's not Spanish. So the answer is A. Six, Circle yes if the situation is reportable and no if the situation is not reportable. Now, I know this would be easier if you had your ICD-03 manual or your reporting manual, but this is boot camp. We're just trying to rely on our registry instincts. If you are actually abstracting, you'd want to take the time and look this stuff up. But for this particular exercise, it's okay to just go with based on your registry knowledge. All right. So A, serous cystadenoma with borderline malignancy of the ovary. These borderline cases of the ovary, they are not reportable. They have behavior code of /1. So the answer is no, not reportable. Polycythemia. Polycythemia NOS is not reportable. Polycythemia vera is reportable, but polycythemia on its own is not. C, carcinoma in situ of the cervix with microinvasion. The microinvasion, it's no longer in situ, right? This, even though they call it CIS, once you have the invasion, it is not. So that would be reportable. MRI of the brain, lesion in the occipital lobe of the brain. All right, so if we were to look up lesion in our ICD-03 manual, it would not be there. We do not have a histology code. It is not one of those terms that would make this reportable. However, if we had an MRI, so the answer to D is no. E, echo. MRI of the brain shows a small pituitary tumor. Well, pituitary gland is within the skull. Tumor, if we look it up in our ICD-03 manual, we will see that there's a histology code. I think it's 8000/0. So tumor is a term that is reportable if the tumor arises in the central nervous system. Just a reminder, lesion, and I think the other one is mass, not reportable, tumor, neoplasm, they are reportable. They do have histology codes. Cytology from a paracentesis, probable malignant ascites. So probable malignant, so probable, that's a reportable term, right? However, this is cytology. We cannot use reportable terms for a cytology. So if it said cytology from paracentesis malignant ascites and it was definite, well, that's reportable. But since they used an ambiguous term with a cytology, not reportable. Suspicious breast mass, suspicious, a little redundant. Breast mass suspicious for malignancy, that is reportable. Suspicious for, that is a reportable ambiguous term. Potentially malignant lung mass. Potentially is not considered an ambiguous term that would make a case reportable. So it is not reportable. So the answer to H is no. 7, classic case. Here we've got a patient. This is an interesting one, and I think we've gone over this before, but it serves as a good reminder. We've got a patient that comes, they're diagnosed at your facility, and then we don't know what happens to him afterwards, right? We don't know if he went somewhere else for treatment. We don't know if he did, he just decided not to get treatment. We just don't know. So that means that this is not classic case 00. It's a classic case 10. Now remember, classic case 00, several years ago when COC made the changes to these classic case codes, what they wanted to do was classic case 00 is give you a tool that you can use to help identify patients that are going elsewhere for treatment. You know, patients that you're losing to treatment. So if a patient comes in, is diagnosed at your facility, and then they're choosing to go somewhere else, well, we want to identify those patients as class 00. So if you're a hospital administrator, you may want to say, okay, show me these classic case 00s. Let's find out what's happening. Well, you should have already have that. Why they're not staying here to get their treatment. That's what we want to identify. Patients that are diagnosed at your facility, but you're losing them, that they choose to go somewhere else for their treatment. Okay. And maybe your facility might decide, hey, we need to get this treatment. We're losing all these patients. So the answer number seven is B. That's what when a patient's diagnosed at your facility and you don't know what happens to them, if they got treatment, where they got treatment, anything like that, it's a classic case 10. Eight. Patient was diagnosed with breast cancer at another facility. She then came to your facility for an FNA of an enlarged lymph node. FNA was positive for metastatic breast cancer. Patient went elsewhere for surgery and adjuvant treatment. That is classic case 30, right? Diagnosed elsewhere, treated elsewhere. You helped with just a little bit of the workup. That is not reportable to the National Cancer Database. That is a non-analytic case. Now you're central registry may want you to pick it up. And if you do, that's a classic case 30. Even though you abstract this case, it is not going to go to the National Cancer Database because you didn't diagnose the patient and you didn't treat the patient. Nine, we have a patient comes in, they're diagnosed with rectal cancer at another facility, came to your facility for some workup and staging, right? Not reportable yet, not analytic at least. That was 515. Patient got neoadjuvant treatment, came back to your facility in January of the following year and had rectal surgery. All part of first course treatment, right? It just takes a while between the time that they have start that neoadjuvant treatment and the time that they come back for surgery. So what's the classic case on this one? Well, it's if you had been... if your state required you to pick up those classic case 30s, right, you would have, it's not, this is classic case, yeah. You would have, may have be abstracted the cases back, case back here. Your date first contact would be 515. And then the patient comes back, they get the rectal surgery. Now it goes from being a non-analytic case because you're just helping with the staging workup to an analytic case because you participated in that first course treatment. So at this point, your classic case 21. Initial diagnosis elsewhere and part of first course treatment was done at your facility. And in the case scenario, what's the date of first contact? Well, for an analytic case, date of first contact is the first date they were seen at your facility as an analytic case. So this case became analytic, reportable to NCDB on 1/12/2020. So date first contact, 1/12/2020. Well, I think that's it. I'm going to look. Looks like we have one question. Only primary PCV is reportable, not secondary due to another condition. Thanks, Kathy. So going back to our reportability question on polycythemia. So primary polycythemia vera is reportable, not when it's secondary. Okay, at least according to Kathy. I haven't looked that up, but sounds reasonable. All right, that's the only question that I see. Marla?
Yep.
All right, you ready to give us the big picture?
I think so.
All right.
And I agree with Kathy that secondary polycythemia is not reportable.
Good.
So that's two votes. Yeah.
All right. Well, then it must be right.
Yeah. Okay. Let me get the correct screen up here. Sorry, this is taking just a little bit of time.
Yeah, we got done a little earlier this time.
Yeah. Okay. Can you see the slide?
I see it.
Alrighty. Okay, well, hi everyone. I'm very happy to be here to share this presentation on big picture abstracting. And this is a bit of a departure from the usual, this is how you code such and such a data item, but we hope you find it to be a nice change of pace. And we're also going to have several polls throughout that will answer some of the pre-session quiz questions. And in other instances, we'll just be sharing the answers in the presentation itself. So let's go ahead and we'll get started. Slide. Okay. So the objectives for this presentation are to first define what on earth big picture abstracting even is. We'll then move into the resources that help us abstract in the big picture way. We'll also discuss the importance of the source of standard and take a look at the rationale description. We'll show how knowing and understanding these three things help to inform our understanding of the data items themselves. And finally, we'll identify and talk about data items that relate to one another and those that don't, and how being aware of these relationships also informs our coding decisions. So, what is big picture abstracting? Well, it's looking beyond individual data items, instructions, and codes. It's looking at the rationale for the data item. It's looking at what the data item is used for. And it's looking at how certain data items work together. And perhaps most importantly, it's understanding what and who the source of standard is. Beyond the items on the slide, it's also knowing when and how to use resources like the CAP protocols and NCCN guidelines. And at its most base level, it's understanding if you're abstracting for SEER, COC, both, or state only. So in a nutshell, big picture abstracting is really the who, what, why, and how of each data item. And that's what we'll be looking at today. So you might be wondering, well, why is seeing the big picture important? Well, it's important because the patient abstract is more than just this disjointed amalgamation of individual data items. It's the patient's cancer story. And when abstracting, we need to try and consider each data point from the perspective of how it fits into the whole story. And to truly know a story, you have to understand it. It's like reading comprehension. And that's why knowing the who, why, what, and how behind each data item is important, because they provide us with the details to make fully informed coding decisions. And big picture abstracting is also staying true to the intent of the cancer surveillance community. And again, it's that who, why, what, and how that provide us with the intent. And at the end of the day, we do what we do for the cancer surveillance community and not a single standard setter. So where do we find this who, what, why, and how that make up the big picture? We find it in one of the most underutilized, in my opinion, abstracting resources out there, which is the NACER Data Standards and Data Dictionary, specifically chapters 8 and 10. And I think it's underutilized because NACER Volume 2 is intended mainly for central registry use, but chapters 8 and 10 contain very important information not found anywhere else that we can all use. And I do want to point out Appendix G here, these recommended abbreviations for abstractors. It's amazing how many abstractors don't know about this Appendix G here. So if you've never looked at it, I'd encourage everyone to take a look. But for those of us who've never worked in a central registry, it can be very easy to think of the standard setters as only those entities that we submit data to, meaning the COC and SEER. We submit data to the state too, but most of us probably don't think much about what happens to it after that. Well, the data collecting standard setter at the state level is NACER. And before we start perusing the manual and seeing why the NACER data dictionary should be in every abstractor's bookmarks toolbar, I wanted to spend just a little time on the history of NACER, because a lot of the why behind NACER explains why they're so important to CTRs. So we're going to go back a bit in time, back to the decade of boomboxes, big hair, and even bigger shoulder pads, the 1980s. Now, the problem was that in the late 1980s, the need and benefit of pooling data became a priority to the cancer surveillance community. And it soon became apparent that pooling the data was going to be extremely difficult due to insufficient data standardization. And some examples of this non-standardization were data items with the exact same name and intent of collecting the same information, but different registries and software systems use different definitions and even, I want to say gasp, different codes. There were also conflicting standards that registries were trying to abide by. The solution was the NACER Data Exchange Committee, and they proposed that a statement of consensus on data standards be prepared. And a new committee was formed to make this happen, which is currently called the NACER Uniform Data Standards Work Group. And the work group and their mission of keeping data standards the same across the board is backed by the NCI, the COC, and the CDC. And the work of this group resulted in and continues to result in the NACER standards documents. Now, the folks on the slide are all part of the NACER Executive Office staff, with the two most famous being, at least to many of us, Jim Hofferkamp and Angela Merton. The goal of the current NACER data standards, which is volume 2, is to define NACER cancer registration data standards for use by central registries, hospital-based registries, and other groups in North America. The objectives of the standardization effort and volume 2 are to provide a comprehensive reference to ensure uniform data collection, reduce the need for redundant coding and data recording between agencies, facilitate the collection of comparable data among groups, and provide a resource document to help registries that are establishing or revising their databases. And then it goes on to say that who the NACER standards should be used by and why. For the WHO, it says, this document will be used by new and existing facility-based and central cancer registries, and the WHY, to ensure that their programs, standard definitions, and codes are consistent with those used by regional and national databases. And then it talks about other potential users. Okay, back to the NACER Data Standards and Dictionary. As mentioned at the beginning, the two chapters you'll want to become familiar with, if you aren't already, are Chapters 8, the Required Status Table, and Chapter 10, the Data Dictionary. Chapter 8, the Required Status Table, tells us who collects the information and who the source of standard is. At the top of Chapter 8, all of the various codes used in the table, along with their explanations, are listed. For example, the code R means straight up required, R with an asterisk means required is available, and S means supplementary recommended. There are a total of 25 different codes, so this is the first step in seeing the big picture, knowing who requires what data items. You'll also notice that for COC, CER, and CCCR, which is Canada, there are the two columns of collect and transmit. The collect column items are those that usually require the information to be put in manually. The transmit column just means the data item information is transmitted to the standard setter. And the items that are marked as transmit only just means the information is collected in the background. And then the reverse of that, items that are collected but not transmitted simply means the standard setter doesn't want or necessarily need that information for their purposes, or it could be like PHI information. And the one thing Chapter 8 does not include, because it would end up causing this to be the largest manual ever, are individual state requirements. For those, we have to use the appropriate state manual to know their what and how. So the second step is knowing who the source of standard is. And if you only take one thing away from this presentation, I hope this is it. So why is the source of standard so important? It's because whoever the source of standard is, it's that standard setter or standard contributor who essentially owns the coding rules. And it's those original coding rules in most cases, and the instructions were to follow. What this also means is that if the owner of the standard wants to make any type of change to it, or if one of the other standard setters approaches the owner and suggests a change, it's the standard owner that has to bring the proposal to the NACER work group. And using Chapter 10's source of standards, rules, and instructions is explained in Chapter 1 of the Data Standards and Dictionary. It says for each data item, Chapters 8 and 10 list a source of standard, and the documentation from this source should be consulted for coding rule standards. This means that for those other standard setting entities, they have to abide by the source of standards guidelines and intent. And you may work in a COC accredited registry, but if the source of standard is NACER, you'll want to go to the NACER data dictionary and see what their coding rule standards say for the given data item. And we'll be looking at an example here of why this can be so important. And although for the majority of data items, the instructions and codes are supposed to be the same, the slight variations within the different standard setter manuals, even just slight wording changes, can be misleading and cause coding errors. Now, if you ever run across a discrepancy, it's very important to let your central registry know or contact NACER, although it's probably best to contact your central registry first. And these are the best ways to help ensure that inconsistencies are addressed amongst the standard setters. So we're now going to work through an example of a discrepancy and demonstrate using the source of standard. And we're going to use birthplace state and birthplace country for this. Let's say the medical record miraculously has the patient's place of birth documented, and it happens to be Korea. It's not specified whether it's north or south. There are two questions you need to ask first. Who is the source of standard? And then based on that, what manual should be used as reference to determine the correct codes? And this brings us to our first poll, which will answer the first question on the quiz, the pre-session quiz. And that question was, who is the source of standard for birthplace, state, and country? Do you think it's COC, CDC, NACER, or SEER? So we will go ahead and launch the poll.
I'm doing it.
Okay.
There it is.
So we'll give everybody about a minute.
Three, two, one.
Okay, and the overwhelming majority chose NACER. So let's see if that's correct. And you can see that yes, indeed, the source of standard is NACER. And to find the source of standard, we would want to look in Chapter 8 or Chapter 10 of the NACER manual. And the SOS, or source of standard, is listed in both chapters. But since place of birth is required by everyone, it would probably be most efficient to go directly to Chapter 10. But since we're taking the scenic route by looking at Chapter 8 first, and as already noted, we see the SOS is NACER. We then want to click on the item number on the left for more information on the data item, and clicking on item number 254 would take us to Chapter 10. And this is the first part of the information for item number 254 in Chapter 10. We have the description and rationale, and this provides us with the data item's why. And you can see that there are a lot of whys reading through the rationale, and it's really interesting. Now, below the description and rationale, you'd see these codes, although they're not in three columns like this. So where do we find the current codes? Well, at the bottom of the information for the data item, we find the answer. But before we do that, we're gonna take our second poll, which will answer the second quiz question of what manual is recommended to look up birthplace state and birthplace country codes non-central registry. And the options are STORE Appendix D, NACER Volume 2 Appendix D, SEER Program Manual Appendix B, or your state manual. Okay, and a little over half chose SEER Program Manual Appendix B, followed by STOR Appendix D, State Manual, and then NACER Volume 2 Appendix B. Okay, so for everyone who said SEER Appendix B, that is correct. Because at the bottom of the data item, you would see this listed. And it says to see Appendix B for numeric and alphabetic lists of places and codes, and to also see Appendix B of the SEER program code manual, and then it even gives a handy link. And those instructions answer the second question, of course. And then you'll want to use the SEER link as the Appendix B in the NACER manual is for central registry geocoding purposes mainly, whereas the SEER manual has the letter codes we're looking for. So after navigating to the SEER manual's Appendix B, you have a choice of how you want to look up the information. And personally, I like to use Control F to bring up the find box. It's much faster than scrolling and hopefully cuts down on, you know, oncoming carpal tunnel syndrome. So you can see in the SNP that in Appendix B, there are 9 instances in which Korea is listed. But the very first listing gives us the answer to the third quiz question of what are the correct birthplace country and birthplace state codes for a patient born in Korea NOS country and state, which is KOR for the country code and XX for the state code. So let's say you work in a COC accredited non-SEER registry and you came across the same patient born in Korea NOS and needed to look up the country code. And you didn't know to look at the source of standard. You'd more than likely go to the STOR manual and see that Appendix D is where the country and state codes are found. The slide shows a SNP of the birthplace, country, and state instructions found on page 26 of the STOR manual. So you go to Appendix D and do a Control F to find all the listings for Korea. You see that there are only 2 listings. You find Korea NOS, but see that it's listed in the obsolete code section. So you go to the next listing and see that it's for North Korea. But you can't use that because you don't know if they were born in North Korea. What would you have done? More than likely, you would have ended up in the general code section and used the code for East Asia, which Korea is considered part of, or Asia NOS. Both use the same codes, but this would have technically been incorrect since you had the specific place of birth information. Now, this is the kind of scenario that demonstrates why it's so important to go to the source of standard. It's really the only way to ensure you're following the correct instructions and have the correct codes. This example is, also demonstrates the exact kind of scenario in which you'd want to contact your central registry or NACER to let them know about the discrepancy, because really the country codes, they should match. So using the STOR manual would also have been considered a correct answer because all of the codes should match. But with the enormous amount of information contained in each manual, things like country code listings not being updated will happen. And it's just a matter of letting your central registry or NACER know. And this is also a good example of why we have to keep in mind the entire cancer surveillance community when abstracting, which is who, at the end of the day, we abstract for. And it's not as simple always as only using the STOR manual or only using the SEER manual or even only using your state's manual. Now let's take a look at 2 other resources that can help us see the big picture. Hopefully everyone is familiar with and uses the NCCN guidelines or CAP protocols from time to time. Both can be very useful educational and validation tools. They can help you determine if the treatment, air quotes, fits the patient's cancer story and even check up on whether or not the oncologist is following standard protocols and guidelines. So let's say you have a prostate case and the patient gets radiation therapy. The total amount of radiation they receive is 8,100 CGY, and you say, wow, that is a lot of radiation. Is that normal? Well, you can easily answer that question by going to the clinician NCCN guidelines for prostate. And to access, you do need an account, but it's free and easy to create. In the interest of time, we're not going to actually go out to the NCCN site, but hopefully going through the steps to access will be somewhat helpful. Now, once logged in and on the home page, you'll go to the first tab and select the dropdown, which is NCCN Guidelines for Treatment of Cancer by Site, and then select the primary site you're looking for, which in our case, we're using prostate. After clicking on prostate, you'll be taken to another dropdown, and then you'll want to make sure you're in the NCCN guidelines for clinicians, as there are also NCCN guidelines for patients on the site. Choose the PDF titled NCCN Guidelines, and this is what you will see. You would then want to find the Principles of Radiation Therapy section, where you would see that yes, indeed, 8100 CGY is possible. You can also see what risk groups it might be prescribed for. And hopefully you're all aware that NCDB recently announced updated instructions for coding brachytherapy, which now tell us to record the CGY amount when available, but beginning with cases diagnosed January 1st, 2020. In the bottom two sections, you can find the standard prostate brachytherapy dosages in GY, which might be of interest and helpful to you in the future. But again, we're only to record the CGY dosage if it's listed in the medical record and not until we start abstracting cases diagnosed January 1st, 2020 and later. And speaking of the updated instructions for coding brachytherapy, this would be a good time for a little sidebar to take a quick look at the updated instructions. The instructions were announced in the February 6th edition of the NCDB, the brief. And it was about the release of the updated CTR guide to coding radiation therapy version 2.0. And while there were some slight wording and edit fixes, the only update affecting our coding was the brachytherapy update, and you can see the main details on the slide. Instructions are located on page 6 of the updated guide, and they've also added case scenario 13 to show the coding logic. The updated manual can be accessed and downloaded from the February 6th the brief or via cancer forum at the top of the store forum section for radiation. Essentially, if any phase of treatment to a volume has the treatment modality coded to anything between 7 and 16, the dose for that phase should be coded in CGY when available. And if there's only one phase in the entire course of radiation, then the phase dose should also be used to record the course total dose. And once again, this is effective with any cases diagnosed January 1st, 2020 that received brachytherapy. And we're going to look next at how the CAP protocols can help us. But first, we have to know where to find them. And again, in the interest of time, we're not going to navigate to the CAP website, but their templates are very easy to get to. So when you go to cap.org, this is the current homepage. And you'll click the protocols and guidelines drop down and select cancer protocol templates. And that will bring up the templates. Here you can see the SNP of the CAP protocols for breast, and you can see that there are a lot of different protocols, not just one. There's a protocol for DCIS resection, DCIS biopsy, invasive resection, invasive biopsy, and biomarker reporting. And we're going to use the breast biomarkers reporting template for the example, which you would access by clicking on the current PDF version. So what can the CAP protocols help us with? Well, they help with the what and why, and they also help us understand what pathologists have to work with when they're recording their findings and determine if a pathologist has gone rogue by documenting something off protocol. And we'll use ER testing as the example and average intensity of staining. If they document anything other than weak, moderate, or strong, or one of the other terms we're able to use for registry purposes, such as intermediate and none, then they're not following the protocol. And if you have access to the facility pathologists, you might want to track them down to find out why and what they're using. And we also want to quickly show that the CAP protocols for the ER-PR data items correspond exactly with the code descriptions in the SSDI manual. Now, the notes also clue us into what should be happening and why. You can see that note A and note B are referenced. So let's take a look at what those can tell us. Note A shows us what should be happening in regards to marker testing. And if you look closely, you can see instruction that should look very familiar. Pathologists are instructed that when multiple invasive foci are present, the largest invasive focus should be tested. And this, of course, corresponds to our instruction of using the results from the largest tumor size when there are multiple tumors. And note B is a lot like the rationale sections in our registry manuals in that it explains the why for ER and PR testing and gives both the scientific and clinical rationales. So if you ever have the time or are really interested, I'd encourage you to look closely at the CAP protocols and read the notes when a checklist section references them, because it really does help inform as to what's behind the data item. Okay, so we're going to wrap up this section before moving on. First, know and go to the source of standard and understand that the source of standards, coding standards, that's a lot of standards, are the way they are for a reason. Next, keep the patient's story in mind and use clinician resources to verify that what you're finding in the medical record and coding in the abstract makes sense and fits the narrative if something seems off. And finally, to keep the entire cancer standards and surveillance community in mind, because again, at the end of the day, that's who we're abstracting for, the entire community. Now we're going to move on to looking more closely at the description and rationale and how these things contribute to big picture abstracting. Knowing and understanding the description and rationale for each data item inform our abstracting by giving us the why, what, and how. They do this by telling us what's being collected and providing relational information to other data items. They also provide information on how the data is used. The rationale in particular is important to be aware of because it tells us why we're collecting the data. Most of us got into this field after we found out about it because we wanted to do work with meaning and make a difference. And in many cases, the rationale will tell you how that piece of data you're collecting will be used to make a difference. And this is part of the big picture. And I personally believe that knowing why we're collecting a data item and how it's going to be used makes us better abstractors. Before looking at the rationale, we're going to take a look at the description and some potential pitfalls. And while not really a pitfall, the data item names can sometimes cause confusion. If the data item has an alternate name, one of the places you can find it is in this section here, appropriately called alternate name. And here you can see that the COC has an alternate name of date of initial diagnosis instead of date of diagnosis like the NACER listing and SEER uses. So if you're used to searching in STORE for their term by typing in date of initial, and then you go to the SEER manual and type in the same search term, it will only pull up date of initial treatment. So just something to be aware of. And in the last section, we touched very briefly on how standard setters can have slightly different wording that may lead to misinterpretation. So we're now going to look a bit more closely at this and look at the wording differences found in date of initial diagnosis. For date of diagnosis, the source of standard is both SEER and the COC. So which coding rules you follow, of course, will depend on if you're a SEER registry or COC facility. And SEER always trumps COC because SEER is an official government-funded data collecting standard setter. It's part of NCI. You can see that the description in both Chapter 10 and the SEER manual are very similar. The SEER manual reads, the date of diagnosis is the month, day, and year the reportable neoplasm was first identified clinically or microscopically by a recognized medical practitioner. In contrast, the description for date of diagnosis in the STOR manual says, records the date of initial diagnosis by a physician for the tumor being reported. So the point of showing this is to show an example of wording differences and how a longer description might give more clear instructions, but can also increase the number of nuanced differences there might be. For example, is a medical practitioner a doctor, or can it be a nurse practitioner? It's a doctor, but hopefully you can see my point. And a short description may be all that's needed, but it can also leave room for open interpretation, such as if you're just looking at the STOR description itself, you might wonder what constitutes a diagnosis. And this is, of course, massively simplified, but we're just trying to make the point that you have to look at the descriptions in context and very carefully. Anyway, we're going to go ahead and move on to talking about the rationale. And the rationale is the why of the data item. And again, using data first contact for the example, the source of standard is the COC, and it's collected by both COC and NPCR. And this brings us to our fourth quiz question and the poll. And the question was, what is the main usage purpose of the data item, date of first contact? And you can see the answer options on the slide, and you'll see them in just a moment on the poll that will pop up.
Should be up now.
Yep.
Caught me daydreaming there.
Okay, we have 46% choosing any and all of the above, 29% used to track timeliness of individual registry reporting to central cancer registries, and 25% used to track the number of days from first contact to when patient initiates treatment. Okay, so the answer is any and all of the above. So really, none of the answers were incorrect. But why was it all of the above? Why was that the correct answer, really any of the answers? Well, the rationale sections of the NACER and STOR manuals list all the possible uses from each standard setter's point of view. However, while the standard is set by the COC, they simply are responsible for the data item and any changes related to the coding instructions. But they're not responsible for how the data is used. They can't dictate that. So like in this case, NPCR and state registries will use the data item to measure the timeliness. The COC uses it in a couple different ways, including timeliness, and individual facilities can use it really any way they want to. So we're going to put the rationale into action, and here's the scenario. The person, this was an actual question, submitted to us, and it was, I have a question about the margins for a resection of an acoustic neuroma. The op report documents residual disease. The surgeon states that he left a very minimal amount of tumor along the nerve since it was adherent and could not be safely dissected off the nerve. About 90 to 95% of the tumor was removed. The path report doesn't mention margins, and there is no synoptic reporting done. And then you can see the path report final diagnosis there. And the question continues that per the rules for margins, you'd use the gross description to code 3 macroscopic margins. But the gross does not mention margins, but the surgeon literally saw that there was residual tumor. After looking at the rules, I'm confused as to what the margins would be coded as, 9, 3, or 0. So we're going to go ahead and work through this. So first we see that the source of standard is the COC, and it's required by the COC and required by SEER when available, because that's what the R asterisk denotes. We can read the description, and then we get to the rationale, and it states, this item serves as a quality measure for pathology reports, is used for staging, and may be a prognostic factor in recurrence. This item is not limited to cases that have been staged. It applies to all cases that have a surgical procedure of the primary site. So just by reading the rationale, we know that this data item is used to evaluate pathology report quality. So the fact that the surgeon stated in the op note that the tumor was not resected in its entirety doesn't factor in to this particular scenario because the path report didn't mention margins. Now, admittedly, this probably isn't the best example for this data item, and we'll see why in just a little bit. So then the info in chapter 10 tells us to refer to the most recent version of STOR for additional instructions. So we go to the STOR manual, and we see that the coding instructions support the rationale by instructing that the margin status is to be recorded as it appears on the pathology report. Then we also see that we're to code 9 if the path report makes no mention of the margins, as was the case with this scenario. Now, the reason this scenario wasn't the best example is because this case wouldn't ordinarily have margins because there's no CAP protocol for benign tumors. But this fact would also support coding 9. Okay, next section is understanding how data items relate to one another. And this is the concept that we can't have tunnel vision when coding individual data items and have to look at how by coding one item, it may or may not impact what you can code in another data item. And date of regional lymph node dissection is an excellent example of needing to look at how and what the field is used for and what other data items the field relates to. So if we go first to chapter 8, here we see the date of regional lymph node dissection is required by the COC and collected by SEER from COC accredited hospitals, which is what the RC denotes. Next, we look at the rationale, which states it is a known fact that sentinel lymph node biopsies have been underreported. Additionally, the timing and results of sentinel lymph node biopsy procedures are used in quality of care measures. This data item can be used to more accurately assess the date of regional node dissection separate from the date of sentinel lymph node biopsy if performed. The coding instructions in STOR then tell us to record the date of regional lymph node dissection documented in the regional lymph nodes examined field. And that gives us our first degree relationship. Date of regional lymph node dissection directly relates to the data item regional lymph nodes examined. So then we go to chapter 8 and see that everyone requires this data item. The rationale in STOR tells us that this data item is necessary for pathological staging, and it serves as a quality measure for pathology reports and the extent of the surgical evaluation and treatment of the patient. The second degree relationship then becomes the regional lymph nodes positive field, because if something other than 00 or 98, and I don't remember which is which, is coded in regional lymph nodes examined, something has to be coded in regional lymph nodes positive or you're going to get an edit. And the rationale for regional lymph nodes positive says the exact same thing as the regional lymph nodes examined field. And then this leads us to the third degree relationship, which is AJCC staging and the PN category assignment. And there was an error on the slide handout that is fixed on here. I had the wrong data item and rationale listed, and it's just, you know, when you cut and paste, sometimes these things happen. So there are other related items like scope of regional lymph node surgery, and if not all of the coding stars align perfectly, meaning if everything isn't coded as it should be, as it relates to the other data items, you will get an edit. And there are also data items like date of sentinel lymph node biopsy that are sometimes related to the date of regional lymph node dissection, and sometimes they aren't related. And this will also serve as a review of the sentinel lymph node biopsy clarification that was in the February 13 edition of the NCDB, the brief. And we're reviewing this, but looking at it from the perspective of the date of regional lymph node dissection field. So this is an example of when date of regional lymph node dissection is not related to the data items, date of sentinel lymph node biopsy, regional lymph nodes examined and positive, and scope of regional lymph node surgery. And that's in a scenario where only a sentinel lymph node biopsy is performed for breast and melanoma cases, and there isn't a regional lymph node dissection. The date of regional lymph node dissection is left blank. All of the other data items would still be coded, but not date of regional lymph node dissection. But then when there is a sentinel lymph node biopsy and a regional lymph node dissection, like in the case scenario on the slide, the date of regional lymph node dissection would be coded. And it doesn't matter if the regional lymph node dissection is performed during the same surgical procedure as the sentinel lymph node biopsy or later, which if it's later, of course, the date of regional lymph node dissection itself would be different than the date of sentinel lymph node biopsy. The other instance when date of regional lymph node biopsy would be coded is when there's only a regional lymph node dissection. So you can review these at any time if you find it helpful. Okay, and we do have a surprise bonus section, or it might not be a surprise if you looked at the slides ahead of time. And the bonus section is going to look at using the right tool for the job. As everyone knows, we have a lot of manuals, and it's very tempting to use CRRSA as a one-stop coding shop, but there are numerous reasons why it's not always a good idea. The number one reason is because its original primary purpose was for coding EOD. And unless you work in a SEER registry or your state requires EOD, I'd really recommend not using the site and sticking to the manuals of data item origin. Or if you are going to use it, just be sure to go to the manual of origin if you ever have even the slightest question about how to code a particular data item. Another reason using the manual of origin is preferable is because using CRRSA might inadvertently cause you to incorrectly crosswalk guidelines. And the final reason, the site does not contain complete coding instructions for all data items. And we're going to take a look at a couple of examples of this. And this is a question that was asked in the AJCC forum on Cancer Forum. And you can see the title of the question there on the slide. And the question was, AJCC 8th edition, page 120, does not allow for CTX as an option. If we manually enter it, we get edits. Staging calculator for oropharynx HBV mediated, and then the person lists everything she put into the staging calculator. And then at the end, it shows what the staging calculator derived. And I do want to mention that this was a scenario that happened when version 1.6 was the current version. At that time, the calculator derived TX CNO CMO stage group 1 The questioner went on to ask, I was wondering how to code the clinical T if we do not have a measurement, which would be correct, CT0, CTX, or leave it blank. And for anyone not familiar with the staging calculator, the tool is on the SEER RSA site, and you can see the tab there is circled. And here was Donna Gress's response, and she said, TX is not valid for this chapter. EOD does not use the pure AJCC staging. And so right there, the fact that Donna Gress states that EOD does not use the pure AJCC staging is a pretty straightforward as to why we should only be using the AJCC manual for staging purposes. What Donna says, we tend to listen to it. Okay, this next example is also from Cancer Forum and shows how by not using the original manual, the questioner didn't have all the information and probably could have figured out the answer by using the manual of origin. So you can see here the question starts with, there were two core biopsies performed on one breast mass and showing invasive ductal carcinoma, and FISH was performed on both core biopsy specimens. Per the SEER RSA website, note 6 instructions, I'm looking to document the highest result. Could you please advise which would be the highest? Also, is it appropriate to document dual probe ratio 5.5 and dual probe copy number 19.5 in the respective SSDI data item fields, since they come from different biopsy specimens? If the answer is no, which set would be considered the highest? So this is what the questioner would see in the SEER RSA in terms of instructions, as these are the only SSDI instructions contained in SEER RSA for this data item. And there is note 6, which tells us to use the highest when multiple biopsies are performed on the same tumor and the biopsies have different test results. And this slide shows the first part of the SSDI instructions for the data item that contains the information not found in SEER RSA, with the exception of note 1, which was just included to show where the notes begin. SEER RSA doesn't contain the description which has the information giving us the answer as to which test is the highest and should be used for this data item. The last part of the description says, HER2 and CY2 hybridization summary is the summary score for results of testing for ERBB2 gene copy number by any ISH method. Now, one of the reasons this data item is based on the gene copy number and not the ratio is because this data item could also be coded from a single probe ISH test, in which case there is no ratio for a single probe. And that's also why it has to be coded based on the gene copy number. So putting this information all together, since the copy number of core biopsy number 2 is highest, you would use both the dual probe ratio and copy number from the same core biopsy for the data items. The results from the same core biopsy specimen, they have to be used because the copy number is part of the equation on which the ratio is based. Additionally, note 5 found in the SSDI instructions for both dual probe ratio and dual probe copy number say to use the same report used to record HER2-ISH summary. So this also supports coding those data items from biopsy number 2. And what we just went over answers 2 more of our pre-session quiz questions, which were, which of these biopsy specimens would be considered the highest? And we just heard that it would be core biopsy number 2. And SEER RSA can be used to accurately code what data items. And the overall correct answer for this is EODs. But if you're very familiar with a primary site and the SSDIs and don't have questions, and you know, you're very comfortable using SEER RSA and it helps you abstract faster, then, you know, by all means, go ahead and use it. But if you ever do have questions, of course, please go to the manual of origin. And the final example is when we use the histology and topography lists in the AJCC manual to try and make things, air quotes, fit so the case can be staged. It pains us to not be able to stage a case. CLAT skin tumor and non-small cell lung carcinoma are just two examples of this. But we have to think about who owns the topography and histology coding rule manuals, which is, of course, SEER. And this answers the last quiz question, which was true or false. If a path report lists the histology for a primary site not found in the corresponding AJCC 8th edition chapter, we are to assign an NOS histology listed in the AJCC manual so the case can be staged. And of course, the answer for that is false. And I know it's been frustrating and confusing when situations come up that result in cases not being able to be staged, but the work group or work groups, they are working on it. And we just need to keep the big picture in mind and tell the patient's story according to the cancer registry rules, which sometimes has to override what we see as a complete abstract. So we have covered quite a bit of ground, including our objectives of defining what big picture abstracting means, looking at resources that help us keep the big picture in mind. We talked about source of standard and why it's important. We also looked at how the rationale description can help us to understand the data items better. And we also touched on data items that relate to one another and how sometimes they don't. And then as a bonus, we demonstrated how there's really no substitute for going to the source manual. So thanks to everyone for your time and attention. And I truly hope you've all found something in the presentation that will be of benefit to your work.
I know I did.
Thanks,
you know,
Jim.
And this is, I'm going to grab the ball back real quick.
Okay.
just kind of interesting. We had a question earlier about, it was from the morning session. It was about the sequence number and the differences between, the instructions in the SEER manual, which were saying to code CIS, or carcinoma in situ of the cervix, to a code 60. And this is all kind of coming around eventually here. What was interesting is I started digging into that a little bit, and it is true that there is that SEER does have some slightly different instructions, but the data item that they're talking about is sequence number central, and it's item number 380. And if you look in the store manual, it just says sequence number, so it wouldn't be obvious that this is actually a different data item, but the real name for this is sequence number hospital. It is a different item number. It's a different data item. So sequence number hospital, which is what a COC, if you're at any kind of reporting facility, well, a COC for reporting facility especially, and you put your sequence in, you're completing the data item sequence number hospital. When that goes to a central registry, they take that and then they create or populate a different data item sequence number central. So there's slightly different, very, very minor differences between the two data items. But, you know, this is a number thing where, you know, just that item number like you'd find in volume 2 can really help you see why there might be a discrepancy.
Huh. Yep. Very interesting.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's enough of me babbling. We need to get back to work. This is boot camp. If everybody would pull up their quizzes. Let's see. This is one we want. Marta, can you, or I keep doing that. Marla, can you, quiz number, can you see my screen okay?
Yes.
Okay, quiz number 3. Okay, quiz number 3, I've got 35 minutes after the hour. If you would take 10 minutes to go ahead and complete this, we'll go over the answers. All right, please begin. All right, pencils down. I'm going to go ahead and go over the answers to quiz three and four. Quiz three, then we'll do quiz four. And then we're going to come back. I have a couple questions here for Marla. So, all right, I guess now we need to do the answers for quiz number three. All right, here we have a guy comes in. He gets a biopsy of the prostate, and he also gets a biopsy of a bone lesion. Both are positive. Which one do we code in diagnostic staging procedure? And that is 02. Whenever you have a biopsy of a primary site, it takes precedence over a biopsy of some other site. So number one is C. Number two, patient has a very small tumor in her breast. They do a core biopsy to see if it is cancer. They come back, they do a lumpectomy, and there's no residual. So the core biopsy ended up removing all of the tumor, right? Now, at one point, we'd been instructed to code that core biopsy as a lumpectomy, and then that lumpectomy is a wide excision. But that's really not reflecting what's going on. What this patient was, they saw that small tumor, they biopsied it to see if it is cancer, okay? So that is a diagnostic staging procedure. I know in effect it was an excisional biopsy, but that was not what they were going in there to do. They were going in there to just sample it. So that's it.
Jim, sorry. I don't think we can see your screen.
Oh, man, you want to see everything, huh?
Yeah.
All right, so I need to share. How about that?
There you go.
All right, thank you. Sure. So we got a biopsy of the primary site. So number one was C, number two is A, right? That core biopsy is a diagnostic staging procedure. And then that lumpectomy is going to be coded as a, excisional biopsy. All right, so that's number two. Number three, patient comes in, they get that mediastinoscopy, right? They just do a scope down in the chest between the lungs. They see some abnormal lymph nodes. They excise them. They come back and they're positive. Now, this is something, it's always kind of, I just don't like the fact that we're coding the removal of these lymph nodes or biopsies of these lymph nodes as in a surgical treatment field. It just doesn't feel right because it's not treatment, right? They're just removing those lymph nodes for diagnostic purposes. But it's not my call. That's the rule. The rule is any kind of biopsy of a lymph node, whether it's a FNA or just a couple lymph nodes, it's coded in scope of regional lymph node surgery. It's just what we do. Answer to C or to three is C. We code that for 1 to 3 regional lymph nodes in scope of regional lymph node surgery. Number four, we've got a patient that comes in with two primaries. She's got a primary in her right breast and a primary in her left breast. They do a bilateral modified radical mastectomy, right? Take both breasts. How do we code these? Well, you got two primaries, right? You're going to complete two abstracts. Abstract for the left breast, the treatment for that left breast cancer was a mastectomy. Modified radical mastectomy, code 51, right? The treatment for that one breast was to remove the one breast. Treatment for the other primary was to remove the other breast. So each of those is coded as an individual procedure. It's not coded as a 52. Number five, now this one's a little different. In this one, there is a patient, she has a history of ductal carcinoma in situ, diagnosed 20 years ago, right? Treated with a lumpectomy, disease-free for 20 years. Good for her. Patient returns in 2020 and is found to have a new DCIS in her right breast, so the other breast. Patient opts for a bilateral simple mastectomy, no reconstruction. Surgical procedure of the primary site is, now this one's a little different. This one, even though she'd had that primary in her contralateral breast, that was 20 years ago. That's not the case now. She doesn't have cancer in that. So technically, that breast where the original DCIS is, it's disease-free. So this is going to be a simple mastectomy with removal of the uninvolved contralateral breast, code 42. This is something that just got posted the other day on COC standard, which I tell you what, COC is doing a really good job, I think, of answering these questions. All right, that's it. Quiz number three, done. Like I said, we'll do quiz number four now. Why don't you go ahead, take 10 minutes, finish quiz number four. We'll go over the answers. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit about Marla's stuff. Then we'll wrap up with a review of the Cancer Forum and Sear Sync. All right. Please begin quiz number four. All right, time's up, pencils down. Quizzes are done. All right, let's go ahead and go over the answers. Quiz number four. We did have a question come in about, in general, how to do these. But I want to go through the answers first. All right, number one, I have this. This is a melanoma patient. Patient has a suspicious mole. They do an excisional biopsy, 714. They did a PET scan, which showed some epitrochlear, which we learned where they are, your forearm, right? Suspicious for Mets on 8/4/19. They did a re-excision and sentinel node biopsy. They did the sentinel node biopsy. They had the pathologist sit there. They looked at the lymph nodes. They said, yep, these have cancer in them. So they went ahead and did the dissection, which is exactly why we do the, why they do the sentinel nodes. All right, so how do we code this? Date of sentinel node biopsy was 8/4/19, right? That's when they did the procedure. Sentinel nodes positive, those are 97. Yeah, that's kind of one of those goofy things when they take out, when they do that dissection at the same time as sentinel node procedure, they don't have you code the number positive. It seems kind of silly, but I think when they were putting these rules together, the CAP protocol didn't have a place for positive sentinel lymph nodes. So they thought they'd make it easier on registrars. They just assumed that information would never be there. I know it is sometimes. Jim, yeah.
Sorry. Oh, yeah. We can't see your screen.
Oh, my gosh. Man, time to wake up. All right. See me?
Yep.
All right. Okay, so code 97 is what we use for sentinel nodes positive when there has been a lymph node dissection at the same time and we have positive nodes. Okay, number of sentinel nodes examined is six. Six lymph nodes examined or since during the sentinel node procedure. That's what we code here. Date of lymph node dissection is the same date as the sentinel lymph node biopsy. Regional nodes positive, 02. Examined is 18. Right? They took six nodes during the sentinel node procedure, and they took 12 nodes during the dissection. Fingers and toes, right? We end up with 18. 6 plus 12 is 18. Scope of regional lymph node surgery is A6. Right? That would be sentinel node biopsy and node dissection done at the same time. All right, here's one that's a little bit different. Patient presented with a lump on her breast, did a core biopsy, positive for carcinoma. 312, 321, she comes back in for a lumpectomy and sentinel node procedure. No sentinel nodes were identified, so they injected the dye, they let it kind of go around, but it didn't get picked up by any of those regional lymph nodes. It failed to map, that's what we call that. When that happens, sometimes the surgeon just decides, well, better safe than sorry. So they go ahead and do that axillary node dissection. So how do we code that? They ended up taking 15 lymph nodes out. They were all negative. seems a little bit odd how we do this, but these are the instructions. So our date of sentinel node biopsy, when it fails to map, we just basically say, no procedure was done when it comes to data sentinel node biopsy, sentinel lymph nodes positives, and sentinel lymph nodes examined, right? So it's going to be zeros or you leave it blank if your software, it depends on how your software works, either blanks or zeros. Sentinel node positive would be 98, examined 00. Date lymph node dissection, dissection was done. It was done on 3/21/19. Regional nodes positive, 00. Number removed, 15. Okay, that makes sense. Then scope of regional lymph node surgery, and this is where there's kind of that disconnect. And Waller was talking about, you know, how sometimes these data items are connected, other times they're not. This is one of those where really they're not. So scope of regional lymph node surgery, the code we use is code 6, which says sentinel node procedure was done, followed by wide excision or axillary. Followed by a dissection. Okay, so just not necessarily intuitive. They don't really jibe, but this is the way we code it. Okay, number three, Here we have a patient came in, recently diagnosed with breast cancer, 1/14/20, had a lumpectomy, sentinel node biopsy. Three sentinel nodes were removed. One was positive for isolated tumor cells. Others were negative for malignancy. Actually, node dissection was not performed. So, date sentinel node procedure, 1/14/20. Sentinel nodes positive is 0/0. Anybody want to guess what this would be if it was a melanoma primary? In that case, we would have counted those isolated tumor cells and it would have been a 0/1. For breast, isolated tumor cells are not considered malignant. So sentinel nodes positive is a 0/0. Sentinel nodes examined, 0/3. Date regional node dissection is, I put zeros. If you put blank, that's fine. Because they did not do an axillary node dissection. Regional nodes positive, 0/0, nodes examined, 0/3, scopal lymph node surgery, 2. All right, number 4, patient was diagnosed with left breast primary on 6/24/14. An FNA of a suspicious axillary node was done, 7/12/19 was positive for Mets from the breast. Patient received a full course of neoadjuvant chemotherapy. On 11/15/19, patient had a mastectomy with sentinel node biopsy, no residual malignancy was found. Two sentinel lymph nodes were negative. Kind of the, it's not weird. It seems unusual to me, but whatever. Sentinel nodes positive, sentinel nodes examined, regional nodes positive, regional nodes examined. Neoadjuvant really doesn't play a factor. These are both cumulative data items. So it doesn't matter if these were done before or after, or in like in this case, you had one lymph node biopsied before and others biopsied after. They are cumulative. So count all this stuff together. So data sentinel node biopsy was 11/15/19, right? After the neoadjuvant treatment. Sentinel nodes positive, 0/0. Sentinel nodes examined, 0/2. Date regional node dissection, they did not do a lymph node dissection, so that's zeros or blanks. Regional nodes positive. Okay, so this is kind of weird. So they did the FNA of that axillary lymph node, and they took those other two lymph nodes out. So we've got to count that as a 0/2, or as a 95. That's for our codes, regional nodes positive. Regional nodes examined is a 0/2. And, you know, when they do an FNA and then they take a couple lymph nodes out, we assume that one of the lymph nodes they took out was that, unless we have something stating otherwise. So that's a 0/2. Scopal lymph node surgery would be a code 2. All right. So now we got some questions. I don't see any right now. Code, I thought 97 was only used for breast, not melanoma. I'll double check that. I thought that it was for either, but we'll double check that. Good catch, Michelle. Okay, somebody else seems to think that 97 is not appropriate for melanoma. I thought it was for both breast and melanoma. We'll double check that and get it back. It probably says it really clearly in the manual and I just missed it. All right. Okay, I tell you what, so let's go ahead and work our way backwards. We're going to start off with a couple questions from Marla's presentation. Okay, so one question. So the COC tells registrars in accredited program to use the STOR manual for abstracting cases. Is this changing? Are we now to have registrars use both STOR and SEER coding manual? No, registrars should still keep abstracting the way they are abstracting. However, if there are situations where, say for like surgery codes or something like that, where maybe the STOR does not address something, they certainly can look at the SEER manual for some additional information. I don't know, Marla, did you have any comments on that?
No, what you said is correct. If there's like ever a discrepancy, if you come across a discrepancy, go to the source.
Well, you go to the source, and you should probably go to like either go to this like your central registry or send something into the COC saying, hey, there's a conflict here and let's get it resolved. I know it doesn't seem like it, but SEER and COC especially, they spend a lot, actually all the standards, there's a special group called Technical Advisory Group, the TAG team, that it's made up of high-level standard setter representatives, and they look at these issues where, okay, it doesn't look like the SEER manual and the STOR manual are on the same page here, and they come to and they talk about it, and you know they argue about it, and usually it comes out there's some kind of resolution. There's some kind of compromise where one will say, okay, we'll just do it your way or the other way. There is it really is a functioning group, but sometimes they come into you know there is stuff where they just agree to disagree, but that's pretty unusual. All right, can the STOR manual be updated to direct the SEER program manual appendix people to SEER manual appendix B? And my comment to that was, you know, that's a COC decision. And I would guess in V21, they will either update that manual or they'll direct users somewhere else to a different appendix. Core biopsy, breast done first, lumpectomy a month. Okay, so now we're getting into, okay, so this one is kind of gets back to what we had in quiz four. I'm going to go back though. I thought Marla says to look at the source of data item and go to that manual to see how to code the item. Maybe I misheard. I don't think that's where you were going with that, right? I mean,
right. It kind of goes along with the one question that we were just talking about to, you know, when there's a discrepancy.
Yeah. So if there's something that really just doesn't make sense, this is just really using volume two. It's another tool in your tool belt to kind of get that big picture background information. If you're in a COC hospital, your main instruction should come from that STOR manual. And, you know, if there's a conflict between that, say your state registry, that's when you need to start talking to people. Surgical margins. The pathologist does not get the macroscopic tumor in their specimen. They get the resected specimen. So how can they comment when there is macroscopic residual tumor? I'm not sure. Was that part... I know you're talking a little bit about surgical margins.
Yeah, and that this may play into also why the benign brain wasn't a good example to use.
Okay, we'll come back. We'll come back to that one in the Q&A. Quiz number three, question number two. Core needle biopsy, lumpectomy revealed no residual. Per SEER program manual, record size from an incisional biopsy, use the clinical guidelines for if the biopsy was done during the clinical time frame, use a source that gives you the best size and take the largest size. An incisional biopsy that removed the whole tumor is actually an excisional based on SEERs, and we would code number two. So SEERs on the same page, or at least they were when this was resolved about a year or two ago, on the same page as COC. I'd have to go back and look at those data items and make sure that, you know, because I think there are some differences in instructions on tumor size. Not everything is linked, but SEER was good with these coding instructions. As far as coding, SEER doesn't take collect diagnostic staging procedure, but as far as coding the surgery codes, they did get on board with this. This was actually one of our TAG discussions. I'll double check that and make sure everybody is on the same page. I think that's definitely one of those that did get resolved. Case number four, why use scope code 2 for scope of lymph nodes versus 7? On case number 4, why use scope 2 instead of 7? Because axillary node dissection was not number 4. Yeah, there was no axillary node dissection performed. All right, and Linda stated that it would be helpful for hospital registrars to check with central registries when discrepancies are found between reference manuals. We're not a SEER state. I would not point a registrar to the SEER manual for birthplace country codes. And she also goes on to say, Cree has not been a country since 1948. That stuff gets complicated when it comes to those birthplace codes and when they should be used and when they shouldn't. Yeah. And to be honest, a lot of it's going to come from your pull-down menus, and your software vendor should have the appropriate codes for the appropriate.
I had responded also in the chat that the example was for a patient where all that was known was that they were born in Korea, but we didn't know if they were in North or South. And in that type of situation, it would be Korea NOS.
Okay.
Korea NOS doesn't mean Korea as a country. So.
Yeah. And actually, we just got a note from somebody from SEER who is watching the webinar. This is works for SEER. For questions on number 2, SEER would not code the core biopsy. We would only code the lumpectomy in that case. We refer folks to the COC for questions about coding multiple procedures for a single primary. All right. Thank you very much, Peggy. All right. I think those are all the questions right now. So that takes us to our next. Actually, give me just a second. We'll get you, take a breath. Boot camp's tough, man. All right, so our next thing we're gonna do is we're gonna talk about using the Cancer Forum and SEER Sync. Now I'm gonna start off referring you to other sites for additional training. Sounds like a little bit of a cop-out, but man, I tell you what, they did a really good job. If you go to SEER Educate, and we've got the link here, and what you have to do, you actually have to log in first, and then you can kind of put the link. Maybe it's just me, I had a tough time kind of finding this, but it was worth the search. There's 3 videos. There's one on how to use Ask a SEER Registrar, so that's actually submitting questions. Another one on how to use SEER Sync, the SEER inquiry system, and that's how to do searches and that kind of stuff on their database. I don't know who they had do these, but they did a really good job, very professional job. And then there's a third one on creating reports from the SEER Sync. So let's just take a look at the SEER Sync. First off, here we are on the website. You can just Google SEER inquiry system. I'm gonna just take a quick look at Ask a SEER Registrar. This is actually where you'd go to submit questions. And these are the topics that are covered. So you can send these questions to Ask a SEER Registrar, whether you are a SEER person or not, you can still send them in. All questions related to the solid tumor rules, multiple primary rules, ICD-03, hematopoietic rules, SEER manual, SEER-RX, EOD, summary stage, all those old collaborative stage, those all go to Ask a SEER Registrar. Okay, you would not send those. If you have a question on the solid tumor rules, don't go to the cancer forum. They're just gonna say, wrong place, go over to the SEER inquiry system. Okay, and it's real easy to send it in. We're not gonna spend a whole lot of time on this site. I'm gonna spend more time talking about cancer forum, but the same concepts when we get to submitting questions, they apply to whether you're submitting to the cancer forum or SEER Sync. Okay, so those are the topics. Here we have the SEER inquiry system. if you just, the main page, they just list all the recently answered questions. So they just have them submitted here. One thing that is a little bit different about SEER Sync, so you send a question into SEER, Ask a SEER Registrar, not all questions end up on the sync. They do kind of go and they cherry pick and they find the ones that I think that they think will be the most relevant to people doing searches. But not every question is going to end up here. Whereas on Cancer Forum, most do, at least as far as I know, they mostly do. So if we wanted to look at this first question, let's see, it's solid tumor. Let's look at that one. We've got the question. This is a question number. We've got categories that this falls into, the question itself, the discussion, so a lot of background information, and then the answer. Look at that. They put a lot of effort into putting that answer together. So this is the SEER inquiry. This is what the questions look like. All right, so this is nice if you just want to kind of come see what's going on, you know, what new questions have been submitted. But if you have a specific question, you're going to want to do a search. And they have this, I'm calling it a search engine. This is just kind of the form you fill out, or it helps you do the search. Now, if you had a question, let's say we were worried about, we had a question for breast on a solid, I'm going to put solid tumor. All right, so those are just three questions. So I put that in each one, and this works as an and proposition. So it's going to look for questions that have these three words in it that were submitted between 2000 and 2020. We do a search, and we found a whole bunch of stuff here. So again, we could just click on the question that gives us all this, the question, background, discussion, answer, even tells you when it was last updated and finalized. So I think that's kind of cool too. It's definitely helpful. we've got, you can just do a quick search where you don't have to break it down into different boxes. Detailed search. This is kind of cool. So if we just have your question ID, so I know, like, especially when I'm putting trainings together, I will go through here and I'll just, you know, get a bunch of questions, pull a bunch of questions off the SEER Sync and the Cancer Forum, and I put them in a document. I can just use that for a reference. If I want to go back with SEER Sync, I can just type the question ID in, say do a search, and it takes me right there, right? So that's pretty handy. Category, if we had that breast question, say we're doing solid, well, say we're, for whatever reason, we got a question that involves both brain and bladder. I put both categories here, or maybe better be put solid tumor rules. So I want to, well, here we'll just do multiple primary rules. So we got an old case. So now we've got these two categories. We have an and proposition. So that means that any question that it pulls up is going to have be related to both breast and multiple primary rules. We could do or. That would give us all questions that have breast or. So that would give us a lot more questions pop up, a lot more posts. We can put the last updated or finalized if we don't want a bunch of old ones, or maybe we do want a bunch of old ones. Free text. So here, instead of categories, we're just putting our words, and we can do the and or function there. And again, if we wanted to just look at questions submitted prior to, let's say, to, you know, 2017, if we're looking at multiple primary rules, we could do that. And it'll come up with all these different questions. And we can actually produce a report as well. Okay, so that's just a down and dirty how to do a search on the SEER Sync. Now let's take a look at... let's look at Cancer Forum. So we had those little videos for the SEER Sync. Donna Gress put one together for the Cancer Forum and specifically for staging questions. And I tell you what, it was helpful. I really did. I learned some stuff from it. And I use the Cancer Forum all the time. If you didn't want to, you wouldn't even have to watch the whole thing. The review of how to use the search function is relatively short. And then she talks about specific questions and goes into them. So if you're just trying to get some background on how to do the forum, you just watch some of it. I got the link here if you want to. It's in the 8th edition webinars, cancer forum and staging questions. Actually worth one CE, but I think you have to stick around for the whole thing for that. Review of search exercises. Okay, so one of the things I wanted to do was give you some practice doing searches. there is no, you know, one size fits all for these searches or how to do them. So I'm just going to kind of talk about how I did stuff. Oh, here we have all the questions that Marla put together. So this was the take home. I just gave a couple scenarios and asked you to answer. This first one, we had a radiation oncologist at your facility assigned a clinical stage of T0 into MO stage 3A to one of her patients. That looks kind of odd. So as a well-trained registrar, we're looking at that and saying, I don't think that looks quite right, but probably better make sure. So I go off onto the AJCC 8th edition or the AJCC forum and I do a search. All right. So this is, again, this is a T0 into MO stage 3A. I want to see, is there anybody else out there having something similar? Let's go ahead and take a look at the cancer forum. All right. So here we have the cancer forum. We've got all these different forms we can go into, but I'm interested in the 8th edition TNM. Okay. And we're looking at it was a lung case, wasn't it? So lung is the thorax. Oh, I could have gone straight to lung, but make sure I'm in the lung chapter. I try to get as close to the forum, drill down as deep as you can, and then I do the search. Now, a couple things about the search on the cancer forum. If you type in a couple of words, so let's say I typed in stage and T0, there's an implied AND in here. And the computer just kind of says, okay, I'm going to look for questions that have the word stage and T0 in it. Now you can type the word and, or you can just not type it. The computer just assumes it's there. You could also type in or. So if I put stage or T0, it's going to pull up every post that has every post that has the word stage or, well, and also in addition, every post that has a T0 in it. Okay, so just be careful with the words that you use. There are times where that or is really a powerful tool, but usually you just want an and. Click on this down arrow. So we can search in titles only, which is okay, or we can search in lung chapter. That's where I really want to be. Okay, all right, so let's see what we get. Stage T0. That wasn't good enough. The computer didn't like that. So let's try again. How about I type in stage, because that's what I'm worried about. How about stage group? I'm going to try 3. All right, 3A. Now, there's an implied and right here, or we could just type it in. Or some people, when they submit their questions, they say 3A. Others say with Arabic numerals. Others with Roman numerals, okay? So this way, if I got stage and 3A this way or stage and 3A this way, the question will pull up. See what happens. All right, so I'm looking through. Here's something. That's a T3. This is exactly what I want. I've got stage group for T0 into MO. Boom, I found it. And what is the answer? No, there is not a stage group for this documentation. Physician was probably documenting this to provide the patient an estimate for the prognosis. Registry will not assign this stage group in the registry database. So I was right. this is stage group 99. But now I've got this statement to back me up when the radiation oncologist asks why the heck I'm not doing what they wrote down. All right. Okay, so that was the answer to that one. Now I'm not going to go through each of these. I'm in the wrong thing here. Too much stuff open here. But this is it. So I got my answer 99. I got the link. I put this post. Now, I think there are actually a couple other links, questions out there that would give you the same answer. This is just the one where I found it. Here we have, this is for the SSDI forum. I'm not going to go through each one of these. I'm going to run out of time. I want to get back to the forums. Okay, there's the AJCC 8th, 7th, store manual, RQRS, SSDI. All right, so now if I wanted to go in, I could type in, I'll just type cirrhosis. And I found what I'm looking for, cirrhosis NOS for a liver, and it tells us when we can use code 7 and when to use code 9. It just kind of clarifies those statements. So that's question number 2, and we'll send out these answers later. Again, just kind of explained where I went. This one is for scope of regional lymph node surgery. Again, this is the link I found to support the answer. The answer is 9. Number 4, patient with a breast mass. Imaging described the mass as being located in the central portion of the breast at 12 o'clock. Okay, so this is primary site. Where do you go for primary site histology? You go to CIRSync. And so this is central portion breast. So we'll just go do a quick search there. So we want breast. We want this primary site. Primary site. Now let's see what we get here. All right, I think this is... All right, actually it would have probably been better if I would have just put breast central. How about that? All right, so this was interesting. Breast, how is subsite coded for breast cancer when it's described as central portion of the breast between 1 and 3? So we've got them describing it in terms of the o'clocks, 1 to 3 o'clock. And then we also have them described as central portion. So those are different codes. And they tell us that codes C50.2 through C50.5 are preferred over C50.1, and then C51.1 is preferred over C50.8. So that's actually really helpful. So that kind of tells me how to code this. Oh, come on, where are we at? All right, so that was the answer to that one. Number 5 was a histology code. What do we do? And again, I just kind of looked up, did a search, and came up with this particular answer. All right, again, we're getting short on time, so we're going to move on to the next section. Okay, a review of search exercise. We've done that. Next, I want to talk about submitting questions. So we've got some scenario. We can't figure out how to assign a code. We've been to the coding through the coding notes. We've been through the manual. We've done a search, and we just can't find what we need. So now we need to submit a question. Now, I highly encourage you to submit questions, but before you submit a question, make sure, spend some time thinking about the question, drafting the question, have somebody else take a look at the question. Make sure that the question is clear, It's concise. Well, here's just a bunch of tips. So when you're submitting questions, give complete and specific examples. All right. These odds are that if you have a question, it's not an easy thing. And if you've done your due diligence looking through the manuals, it's probably something that just doesn't quite fit a common scenario. So make sure that you give very specific examples. Try to think through all the information that the person answering it is going to need. Include dates. And just take some time. I know I've done this. I've sent in questions. Some really complicated thing, and I tried to be as detailed as possible. And I've got all the kind of peripheral stuff down, the thing that I'm spending a lot of time thinking about. Then I get a reply back from the person answering the question, and it's like, well, what's the primary site? You know, so it's easy to miss some of the big stuff when you're focused on some of the more minutia. Okay, so again, complete specific examples. Give references. If you've already looked through the manual and you cannot find an answer to this, say so. Or if you're going through the manual and you find a rule, but the rule doesn't really seem to apply to your situation, cite that rule. Explain why you don't think it that rule applies. Also, other posts. So when you go do your search, you may find a question that is similar to yours, but not quite, doesn't really answer your question, or maybe it partially answers your question. In that situation, when you're submitting your question, include a link to that post that partially answered the question. Okay, that's perfectly fine. The other thing, and this is probably the biggest thing, I went to the people that answer the cancer forum questions, some of the people that answer the cancer forum questions and the CIRSync questions, and told them we were going to kind of go through this. And one of their biggest things were they said, tell everybody not to send me hypothetical questions. I want real life situations. Hypothetical questions, and they all agreed they understand why you ask it. I mean, when you read through the rules, sometimes you're like, well, there's an obviously not a rule for this situation, and this situation could happen. So it's tempting to send in questions on situations that haven't really occurred. But those cause problems. They lead to errors. They lead to setting bad precedents. It's really important that whenever you can submit a question, or when you do submit a question, make it based on a real case, a real situation. Okay? It's a big deal. Include real situations. All right, make sure the question you are asking is clear. Sometimes you can do a really good job outlining the scenario and giving your examples of what the facts of what happened, and the problem is what you're asking is not necessarily clear. Now you've looked at this, you've seen this scenario, you know what your question is, and to you it seems like it just pops off the page. But when you're reading this new, for the first time, the person that's answering the question, they may not see what you're seeing. You really need to make sure that you ask a clear question and then give the example to kind of support why you're having a problem with the question. Also, try to frame the question so that there are only a few possible answers to the question. All right? Don't give that person that's answering the question a lot of wiggle room. I tell you what, I know I answer a lot of questions for edits. And if you get me at a time where, especially when I'm tired or maybe just angry at the world or whoever or whatever, if you get me at the wrong time, I will take your question as much at face value as possible. I will look for the easiest answer to that question you know, that I can see. And that's not good policy. I try not to do that, but it happens sometimes. Now, if you're somebody that's experienced at writing questions, you're going to frame that question so that it you don't give me any room at all to misinterpret that question. This is the question. If you can get it down to a yes, no question, kind of like, you know, attorneys do when they got the guy on the stand, that's even better. But really try to be as concise and clear with what it is you want that person to answer. Okay. Explain why you have a question. Is this scenario not covered in the coding rules? Do the instructions in the coding rules lead you to code what you feel is incorrect? Are there conflicting coding rules? This happens, especially when we have new data items. And really, like all those SSDIs, they're a couple years old now, but it's still relatively new. We're still finding scenarios that just when we put the rules together, nobody thought of, and things change, you know, out there in the clinical world. So different scenarios pop up, and we have to have, you know, we may not have rules to cover those changes. All right. So again, explain why you have the question. This also gives the person answering it confidence that you didn't just send the question without first looking in the manual. All right. Sometimes as somebody that's answering the question, it gets a little frustrating when it's like, you know, basically you're asking me to open the manual so you don't have to. They want to make sure that you've done as much legwork as possible before you sent that question in. Okay. If possible, have somebody else read the question before you submit it. Have a coworker read it and just kind of say, okay, you know, without knowing anything about what, you know, my problem is, if you read this, is it clear what I'm asking? Did I provide enough supporting documentation to make it clear why I'm having this question, why I can't get the correct code? Okay, I think it really is helpful to get somebody else's point of view, especially if this is something you've been struggling with for a while. All right, so again, spend some time drafting your questions. It's a big deal. You're asking for help. Make sure you've done the legwork, everything you can, before you send that question in to the standard setter. All right, now, the SYNC doesn't really have this option, but the cancer forum does. You can reply to a response, and to a degree, the cancer forum does. So if you send an Ask a SEER registrar and they send your reply, you know, directly to you, you can follow back and say, wait a minute, you didn't answer my question. It's okay to reply to responses, but don't take that lightly. There are situations where it's okay to reply, other situations when it's not. So if you do not feel that the question that you submitted was answered, and I can tell you from my experience answering questions, sometimes people have to ask me 3 or 4 times before I finally figure out what it is that they're asking me. And a lot of these are just complicated situations. People don't send easy questions. So it is kind of hard to really wrap your mind around some of these concepts that are being asked. So, you know, be patient with people. And if they don't get it the first time, send a response back and say, no, actually, this is what I'm asking. All right. And so clearly state what you had expected to have been answered. If necessary, provide additional information and be persistent. You know, it's like I said, it sometimes takes 3 or 4 replies before I finally figure out what it is somebody's asking me. Okay. However, you should not reply to a response when it's just simply a matter of, You didn't get the answer you wanted. And trust me, I have been there. You just got to kind of figure out in your mind, do I really want to reply here because just argue because I was wrong and it's not the answer I wanted? Or is this really, they don't really understand what I'm asking. When the response generates another question, now this is something you really have to get a feel for. So let's say you're going through the cancer forum and you find something that addresses your question, you're reading through it, and either it doesn't address your question 100%, so you want to just get a little bit more information about it, or it brings up another question. So, maybe it's like, oh, well, that's how to code this data item, but what about this one? What's the impact on this one? If that's the case, if what you're looking through that and it kind of generates another question, create another post, okay? And sometimes that seems like a lot of work. You're reading through it, it's related, you want to just reply back. And, when you're reading through the post, and it does kind of make sense there, but think of it from the perspective of somebody doing a search. When if the answer to your question is three or four, replies down on a post for a totally different question, that's hard to find. These search engines are tough to search in the first place. Don't make it harder by posting, semi-related questions in a post on something that's only semi-related. Don't hesitate to start a new post. And when you are submitting your posts, look at it from the perspective. I meant to say this earlier, when you're looking at your, before you do post, look at it, number one, from the perspective of the person answering the question, all right? If you are answering this question, is all the information you need there? Is it clear what the question is? And also look at it from the perspective of somebody that's doing a search. Your question is, there's a good chance it's going to be out there and used as a reference for somebody else, all right? So try to look at it from that perspective as well. All right, so here's just an example. I was going through the cancer forum and I just wanted to find an example of and this is actually a pretty good post, or not a bad one, but I think there's some room for improvement. So I wanted to kind of diagram this one. So this one, somebody sent in this question. The title of it was date of diagnosis, and they're asking what would be the date of diagnosis in the following scenario. I like that. She has her question right there at the top, and then she gives a scenario. And she says, in 119, we have a PET scan, she's consistent with colon cancer. Do a biopsy, it comes back negative. Physician summarized the findings in the HPI, including ambiguous terminology, states. And then on 2/119, they actually diagnosis 2/15. So they're asking, what's the date of diagnosis? And we've got some ambiguous terminology up here. This is consistent with, that is a reportable term. So I was reading through this and I was like, this is a really basic question. This is one where it might be a little frustrating. You think, well, this is obvious if you looked in your reporting manual. If you look in the store manual, it says if there's ambiguous terminology, make that the data diagnosis. Well, this didn't seem like somebody that would ask that kind of question. I mean, this is a fairly well-written post. And I started looking at it a little bit deeper and I started thinking, well, I think the problem is she wants to know, I assume it's she, if this biopsy that came back negative kind of disqualified this statement from the PET scan. And so I think that's what her question was. So I was thinking, well, how could we improve this post? Well, first off, I think I would have built on the title a little bit, expanded the title. Data diagnosis is fine, but really the question is related to ambiguous terminology. So maybe you say data diagnosis, ambiguous terminology, or ambiguous terminology, negative biopsy. I think that's really what the questions are related to, or data diagnosis, negative biopsy. So just, I would include a little bit more information in that title, you know, make it so it's a little bit more searchable. Remember, somebody else is going to use this as a reference. It's not just for you. And maybe you could have improved the question, really kind of highlighted what you're asking. Now, this is assuming that what I'm interpreting was the question is the question. But if it was, I'd say in the scenario below, the patient has a PET scan that's diagnostic of malignancy based on ambiguous terms. All right, statement one. However, a biopsy of the suspected malignancy was negative. Can I still use the date of 1/1/19 as the date of diagnosis, even though the biopsy was negative? So there, I feel like I'm really, this could actually, I think, be improved even a little bit more. This really kind of states where my conflict is. Does that negative biopsy negate the ambiguous terms, reportable ambiguous terms used on that PET scan? All right, that's my question. Now, really, I probably should have also cited the store manual, or, you know, kind of where I'm not getting that, or just state I didn't find this addressed in the store manual or something like that. And then gone on and, you know, given this same scenario. So just to show, not only to give the facts, but to show that this is not some hypothetical situation. This is a real situation. All right. And I just went ahead and I'm showing the response. And I think the person that from COC that responded, this is very good response. They cite where in, you know, the rule for data diagnosis, but I'm still not 100% convinced that I think the answer is right. I'm just not 100% convinced that the person that was looking at this understood that the conflict was between the PET scan and that negative biopsy. Maybe it wasn't. I might be just making stuff up. So I'm thinking, well, does this response, you get this response, and if I'm the person that posted it, or even somebody else that's looking for something, you got to think, does this warrant a further clarification? Do I really want to nail down and make sure that that situation, that biopsy, didn't negate it? And the person that posted this must have been okay, because they didn't reply. I don't think I am. I'm happy with the answer. I think she's right. But yeah, so I mean, I think the response is good. So I don't think it really warrants a reply. Yeah. Okay, here's one more. I know we're getting close on time. This is actually a question I sent in. They cut me a little break because it was based on a webinar, and it was actually a clarification. So it's not, I didn't send in a real situation. But here's the question. All right. So this is the actually title of it, grade multiple tumors. Okay. So it's not just grade is a pretty broad topic. Multiple tumors is a pretty broad topic. I think if I was doing a search, I would be searching on both those terms. So I just included them both in the title. I cite the rules per the SSDI manual. In cases where there are multiple tumors with different ER, PR, and HER2 results, we are to code the results from the largest tumor when multiple tumors are present. Is the same true for grade? Do we take the grade from the largest tumor when multiple tumors are present? Okay, I know it sounds a little redundant, but I'm trying to narrow down the possible responses, make sure that it's absolutely clear what I'm asking. And then I follow it up with a second part to the question, are the rules for coding grade when multiple tumors are present different for breast than for other sites? All right, so where's the conflict? The conflict is between the rules for ER, PR, and HER2, and the rules for grade, right? I'm not finding them. Do the current instructions lead you to code to a code you feel is incorrect? I really don't think that I know that this is not addressed in the current coding rules. It's not in the manual. It's not in the notes. I'm, you know, trying to apply, if I try to apply these concepts to grade, I'm going to get the wrong answer. Are there conflicting coding rules? No, it's just a rule that I think is missing. So the response that came back, this came from Jennifer Rule, this issue was forwarded to the CAP Cancer Committee, which I thought it was great. She gave us a reference. This isn't just somebody's opinion. This is CAP, College American Pathologists. Their decision was that when multiple tumors are present and abstracted as one primary, that you take the highest grade. Boom. She answered my question, part one to that question right there. All right. Nothing ambiguous about that one. This applies to all sites. All right. So she just answered the second part. And then she goes on and actually gives me additional information. She says, this statement will be added to the grade manual for 2021 and can be applied to cases diagnosed 2018. So was the answer the question answered? Yes. Is follow-up response warranted? I really don't have any room. If I don't like the answer, it's not, it's just because I don't like it. She was very complete. And I wasn't super happy about it because I think I said in another webinar that you're supposed to go with the grade with the highest tumor, the largest tumor, same as ERPR in HER2, but I was wrong about that. So here we go. All right, some additional considerations. Number one, be professional. And by professional, I just be nice. Have some grace. Give people, cut people a break. I know just going through the webinar, the questions and the posts, there are questions in there where it's kind of, the questions are kind of snarky and the responses are kind of snarky. And that's not good. There's no place for that. If you submit a question and you get a reply back that you feel is kind of rude or snarky, just let it go. We're not here to, we're not in high school. We're good chance you'll never even meet the person that is sending this. It's just try to look at it as, you know, either they answered your question or they don't. No need to say, hey, you hurt my feelings or anything like that, even if they did. Just don't get into that game. Don't try not to let those things escalate. I know personally, you know, if you catch me on the wrong day, I may answer a question. And even if I'm not intending for it to sound snarky or whatever, you know, I go back and I look at it and I'm like, oh man, I hope they didn't upset somebody there with that response. It wasn't meant to be that way, or I'll be very short with my response. And, I don't mean to do that, but I'm human. I have, it happens sometimes. And I know some of the questions I get, especially, you know, people, you know, these complex situations, they sent me like three replies, say, no, I don't think you understand what I'm asking. No, I don't think, you know, and after a while they start getting frustrated. I start getting frustrated. But these are complicated situations and it does take some of that persistence. And sometimes you do get a little tense in those situations. Just make sure, you know, just try to assume that the other person really is coming from a good place. If it does come across a little snarky sometimes, just let it go. Okay. We have a code of ethics, but we're also all grown-ups here. Another thing, COC, AJCC asks that you not put posts in newsletters or, if you have your own forums or stuff like that, at least don't put the text in. If you want to put a link to a question, go ahead and do that. That's fine. So that way, and I know I prefer this too. So let's say you know, they put this answer out there. You're like, oh, wow, that's really interesting. That's a big change. And you put it in your newsletter. And all of a sudden, you know, a month later, they're like, the person that posted that was like, oh, wow, I misunderstood that whole question. Or something else happens and they need to make a change. Well, they can change it on the cancer forum. But if you've put this in print in your newsletter, that bad information stays out there. Don't do that. If you're going to put something in a cancer forum, put the link. Okay. Cancer forum's a living, breathing bulletin board. So SearSync. Posts are updated and clarified. Posting questions to a newsletter or other defeats that purpose. All right. Let's see. Get any questions? It would be helpful if specific references were shared with the answers to help educate. This may lead to better understanding and less questions. Very good. All right, Linda. All right, well, I think that may be the last questions we have. So I think it's time for our fabulous prizes. Fabulous prize winners for this month, we've got Linda of Linda Blush. I'm sorry, Linda Blush. Bloshies. If you'll send me your mailing address, we will get you that fabulous prize. And the other one is going to go to Katie Molnar. Katie Molnar, if you will send me your mailing address, email me your mailing address, we'll get you that fabulous prize. Coming up, I'm really excited. April and May, we've got Denise and Luann. Denise and Luann, they're going to talk about melanoma. Hopefully everybody knows who Denise and Luann are. They do a fabulous job. They're great trainers, and they're just a lot of fun, too. They're going to talk about melanoma in April and central nervous system in May. It should be good stuff. All right, so now what everybody's been waiting for, source of standard is the phrase, okay? I'll be sending the link out in just a few minutes. All right. Well, that's it. Marla, I want to thank you very much. You did a great job, and hopefully we can have you back again.
Thank you so much.
All right. All right, everybody, have a great day. Goodbye.